Hey guys, welcome to the Paddler's Playbook, a kayak fishing experience. On this episode, the guys are joined by Daniel Underbrink from Adventure On Outdoors to talk a little yak camping. The guys discuss how to plan your trip, essential yak packing equipment, and popular yak packing destinations in the great state of Texas. Drew and Chris will also talk about their own camping trips and the Bro Staff Meetup coming up on October 24th. I know I'll be there. Hope you guys enjoy. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the paddle.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Podcast Land. I'm your host, Drew Turner. I'm here with my co-host, Chris Lewis, and this is another edition of the Paddler's Playbook. Guys, on this edition, we're going to change lanes just a little bit. Still going to talk about kayaking, but we're going to talk about yak packing. We're going to talk about taking the kayak to go out and go camping. But before we get into that and get our guests on here, we have a camping trip coming up. We have the Bro Staff Meetup coming up in October. I'm excited to get to this Bro Staff Meetup. Chris, are you excited about this Bro Staff Meetup number two or take two or whatever you want to call it?
I think it's take three, brother. Man, you know I'm stoked to go. The area is going to be ready for us. We're going to be ready for everybody to come out there. We've got a lot more planned than we had thought of. Originally, a beer sponsor. I mean, come on, dude. Who wouldn't want to go camping, fishing, and indulge in a bunch of free booze?
Dude, it's going to be awesome. Yeah, we're going to have beer from No Label Brewing Company. We're going to have
Scott Wallen's listening and he's going, beer?
Beer, beer, beer. We'll have beer there from No Label. We're going to have Austin Canoe and Kayak. They're giving us some swag. We're going to have plenty of stickers. We're going to have hats, shirts, probably some paddle leashes, maybe some other yak accessories there. Real Sportswear is going to hook us up with some gear to give away. We're going to have that. And then Egrid Baits, they're going to give us some baits to give away. So we're going to have baits to give away. We're going to have clothes
those guys
to give
will show
away.
Up.
Yeah, man. It'll be nice to have them all there. But at the Bro Staff Meetup, we're going to have gear. We're going to have clothes. We're going to have yak accessories. We're going to have baits. And we're going to have beer. Dude, that
really
sounds like an awesome meetup.
Because I would have hated it if you said it was clothing optional. I'm not attending an event like that.
Well, depending on how much beer we get, some people may end up going skinny dipping out there in Three Mile Marsh in Matagorda. If you guys haven't seen the event post on the Paddler's Playbook Facebook page, you need to go over there and make sure that you check out the Facebook page. There is an event there for the October Bro Staff Meetup. Just to go through a few quick details with you, it will be October 24th. Now, that's a Saturday. We're going to meet at 6:30 a.m. at the Matagorda Beach entrance. And that's on Saturday is when we're going to meet up there. In between 6:30 and 7, depending on, you know, how many people show up, how many people we may need to pull out of the sand at the beach or who's late and may need to carpool, we're going to give you guys a little bit of time. I think, Chris, the sun doesn't come up until, what, 7:15, 7:20 that day?
We should start seeing some daybreak probably around 7 o'clock, 7:15.
Yeah, so we're trying to get back there as the sun's coming up and make sure that we can get everybody back to the fishing spot, because you will need to buy a beach pass if you're going to drive on the beach. That can be picked up at Stanley's Grocery right before you go over the Intercoastal Waterway Bridge. You need to make sure that you have one of those, and 4x4 is recommended to get back there in 3 miles. You may not have to have it. You may be able to get back there in a truck or an SUV, but Lord, please do not try to drive a Prius or a Camry or something like that back to the beach. If anything, we can park the cars, or those without four-wheel drive, you guys can park on the actual beach, and then we can try to get you and your kayak across 3 mile cut back to where we're going to camp.
That means you, Vincent Vo. We're talking about you. Don't be driving your toaster with that big old Outback on top, trying to get through the sand.
But we will try to get everybody back there that we can. join the Bro Staff page, Bro Staff Friends of the Paddler's Playbook. Join there. Post up, hey, I don't have four-wheel drive. Is anybody going that I might be able to carpool with? We're expecting to have a pretty good turnout, guys. It's going to be fun. It will be primitive camping, though. So there's no water. There's no bathrooms. There's no electricity. Guys, we are in the marsh. You are on the sand. We will have a fire there. We will have trash bags. Everybody, you need to take out whatever you bring in. Bring your water. Bring any kind of food. We will have beer. We will have some gear to give away. We will have baits to give away. But you are on your own when it comes to food. Kyle, I know you're listening. You posted up the disc. Your campsite can be right beside mine. I'll have my grill there. We can tag team on some breakfast tacos.
That's cool, man. I'm gonna bring Rico with me. So you can have the disc, man. We've got the smoker.
Y'all are going to have the big barbecue pit.
It is BYOM, man. Bring your own meat. Okay, we're not providing any meat or food for anyone, so bring your own food. Bring your own water, okay? I'm going to have a cooler full of beers. I may have one or two waters, so I won't share my waters with you, but I might share my beers.
Yeah, and if anybody has the hookup at HEB or any local grocery store or something that wants to donate some waters or anything to us, let us know, man. We'll go pick it up. We'll have a cooler. But as it is right now, we'll have the beer. We'll have some baits. We'll have some gear. And we're going to have a lot of fun at the Bro Staff Meetup. Again, October 24th, 6:30 a.m. at the Matagorda Beach entrance. That's where we're going to meet up, and we're going to stay the night. There will be a fun little tournament that I have a mastermind for. This fun little tournament, it is going to make the playing field even, and it's going to be fun. We'll talk about it whenever we meet up. I kind of want it to be a little surprise. Depending on what Ingrid Bates can hook us up with, it may remind some people of Saltwater Survivor Series, but we'll talk about that later.
So what I would do is I would direct everybody to the event page. The event page will go ahead and continue to update it as time progresses. In fact, we've got a map to lay out the entire area so that you know exactly where you need to go and how we need to set up. Keep your eyes open, man. Keep your eyes open on the event page. You'll find it on the Bro Staff's page, and we share it there. We've shared it to TKF. We've shared it to pretty much all the kayak forums. Well, hey, man, we got to get going here. We got to get Daniel on.
But first, before we do that, Jessica, what's going on with our partners over at ACK and Real Sportswear?
Hey, Bro Staff. As we all know, whether you're fishing in tournaments or just taking the family out for a day of fishing, Austin Canoe & Kayak has high-quality fishing reels suitable for all occasions. Browse a huge assortment of spinning reels, trolling reels, casting reels, and spin cast, along with all your reel accessories. So stop by AustinKayak.com and check out the new Daiwa Coastal SVTW150 or the Daiwa Lexa Type WN300 reel. Both new and available to you at AustinKayak.com. And while you're there, go ahead and enter that Bro Staff code TPP15 for your 15% discount. All right, Bro Staff, between you and me, ever wish you could take the comfort of your fishing clothes and apply it to a dinner with the family? Too good to be true, you say? Well, look no further than RealSportswear.com. The new Tidal shorts are timeless and classic. Without screaming, hey look, I fish in these. With their featured four-way stretch technology and high breathability, you can stay cool on the water or at the family barbecue. Stop by RealSportswear.com and find the color that's right for you. Don't forget to download the app to lose those pesky shipping and handling fees. And always enter that Bro Staff code TPP15. Wear what the guides wear at Real Sportswear. That's it for me, Bro Staff. I'll catch you on the salt side.
Hey, oh yeah, Jess. Thanks for all the tips on our latest with the partners. I know everybody out there is excited to get on some of the deals. Product is back in stock, and we're happy. So, today our guest comes to us from Lafayette, Louisiana. He's native of Kingsville, Texas. And I would definitely consider him a well-traveled man. He's constantly in the pursuit of his next adventure. He's also thought of as the logistical cornerstone of Adventure on Outdoors. Now, I'm not sure, not certain what the position of logistical cornerstone entails, but I'm sure he's going to tell us all about it. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our guest today, Daniel Underbrink.
How's it going, guys?
We're holding it down in Texas, bud.
That's how about good, you? Man. I can't complain heading out in the morning to Montana.
Oh, wow. That's a nice little haul, isn't it?
A couple hours.
They just got a nice cold front, too, didn't they?
Yeah, it should be about 12 degrees at night when we pull up, hopefully.
So,
hopefully.
See what I said?
Oh, wait, wait. About, he said, hopefully, it's going to be 12 degrees. That's friggin' cold. Oh, hell no.
Beats 115 right now.
Oh, man. I'd rather have it 100 like than 12.
Yeah, you get a campfire, though. You're good to go.
So, like I said, this guy's always in the pursuit of his next adventure. So, what brings you to Montana?
Elk hunt.
Damn.
Elk season starts. Right on. Elk for 12 days.
I told you, Drew, this is one of those dudes that one day he's going to be in a newspaper because, you know, he attacked or killed an animal with his bare hands.
Or he got me. That's more likely the scenario.
Oh, man. All right. So on this episode, we are talking about yak packing, and I see a paddle behind you right now. You guys in podcast land can't see this, but we're talking about yak packing, but let's go back a little bit. We ask this question to everybody that comes on our show. Tell us about your first kayak and how you got into kayak fishing, kayak adventures. How did all that begin?
Man, I've always been on the river since I was little. That was our vacation. I mean, I'm South Texas. We went to the Frio River since I can remember. And started, I guess my first kayak would be an inner tube. You know, one of those black ones right inside the tire. Fits right in there, blows right up. That'd be my first kayak. You paddled with your hands, nothing fancy.
And okay, then, what was your first rotomold kayak?
Okay, that's what we're talking about. All right, so what we go is, my first kayak was actually borrowed. I borrowed it, me and my buddy. I did canoeing. Let me back up. We bought a used canoe for $50, and I lived in Houston at the time, right about outside of, I was probably 18, I guess, and we would just we'd take the canoe, and we'd find somewhere out in Katy and get on one of those little rivers that run through it and then get down to, and then we'd just float until we couldn't go any further and then hitchhike back to our truck somehow. And that's kind of how we got going. And then that changed into Guadalupe, Frio, overnighters. And then I started getting to kayaks, borrowed a kayak and loaded it up with a backpack. And went down the Devil's River, slept on top of tarps, under tarps, and in my $50 tent, and we're good to go.
Oh, wow. The Devil's River trip, that's one of my, you know, top five. We had a top five travel destinations on our last episode, and that Devil's River trip is one that I really, really want to do. It sounds like whenever you went, though, there was a lot less permits you had to have, and it may have been a lot easier to get down that river. Is that true? Have you seen a lot of change on that Devil's River trip?
Yeah, I would say the first time I ever went, it was, you had the river to yourself. You had to call a guy that lived up on the hill and beg him to take you. He would vet you to see. I remember the first time I called, I said, yeah, we understand the gradient boundary, everything. We're good to go. And he goes, oh, I can't take you. I said, why? Is like, well, you mentioned gradient boundary. We don't do gradient boundary. We do islands. And I said, if that's the way you want to do it, that's the way we'll do it. You just tell us where to go and we'll be there. I mean, we had two GPS coordinates, and eventually we talked them into dropping us up at Baker's Crossing. And we went in, and, you know, a few days later we came out. And that would be my first one. We didn't have any books. We didn't have anything. We literally brought tuna fish, cooked fish on the side of the river, and just hoped for the best, really. We busted two kayaks that trip. I mean, it was kind of a disaster, but one you can remember forever. And from that point, I was hooked on the long distance, more remote trips. And from then, I just kept on going.
Oh, wow. And I think now you got to have, like, doggy bags. And when I say doggy bags, I'm not talking about the bags that you get whenever you take your food home. I'm talking about the bags that you got to pick up your dog's poop in. Don't you have to produce a certain number of bags or something like that for some of those trips?
Man, it's getting more and more strict. And, yeah, you got to have what they call wag bags, right? That's your poop bag. That's where you defecate in, you know, crap in a bag and wipe it up. I mean, if you go through what people do to figure out how to hold on to your crap, I mean, it is, I mean, we got tubes out there with plugs on it, just regular old sewer lines with a cap and a tube. You dump them in there. People will use dry bags, double wrap. I mean, it's pretty rough, but you have to understand. Man, there's some spots out there you go and right behind a nice boulder, and you realize everybody picked that boulder, and it gets a little gross. So, I mean, there's no soil out there. Everything, any little bit of rain, anything on the rocks is going to run right into that river. And so, I mean, that river's known for being pristine, and you don't want a bunch of that extra nutrients, I guess is what you'd say, floating down the river and getting the water less clear.
What's crazy to me is, you know, we fish here on the coast, and every once in a while we run into the game warden, and the first thing they're like, well, hey, you got any fish? If you're on the Devil's River, they may be like, hey, you got any poop? Let me see your poop.
and you know, it is that way. I mean,
do they really stop you?
Oh, yeah.
Are they asking you and stopping you every time down there? Or?
Oh yeah, I've been on there. We sitting there fishing. Game warden with the first day, we weren't fishing or anything, and game wardens come paddling right by us, and stopped us, checked everything out. We were good to go, and moved on. The next morning, we come up to them again, stopped us again because we were fishing that day, and so the checks were totally different than the first day. So they take it seriously. It's something to be respected for sure, and not taken lightly. You're not mandatory to have permits when you go out there because it's public land or public water, right? But if you want to use the state parks, the campsites that are there for your convenience, then the permits are required. And if you're using permit system, you have to use approved guides. There's plenty of guides that'll take you down the river that has private land and different things. And you know, there's many, many ways to go down that river. But the permit system is the way to go. It kind of, they take statistics and they're watching it and hopefully, and they're checking impact. So it's important, I think, just for the preservation and the conservation of the river is to use the system they put. Cause it helps limit the people. If they give out 12 permits a day. So you can figure a group of four. You know, you have three teams dropping in on the same day, probably really close to the same time. And then you have three or four other guides that are running and maybe dropping two people off at different stretches. And, you know, that river can get crowded real quick and nobody wants it to turn into the Guad or the Comal or the Frio. So the permit system is a good thing. It is a good thing, but it does put pressure.
You know when a great time to be on the Guadalupe River is?
Winter.
The middle of winter, and there's no tubers or anything. We went down there when they were stalking the rainbow trout a few years ago. We caught some very nice trout. We actually found a couple pair of costas that had been dropped during the summer when we were out there. So that is a great time to go to the Guad, is in the middle of the damn the winter there. Chris, it seems like we talk about poop on this show pretty often.
Hey, man, you are the pro.
It's the techniques. You got to know the techniques in the wilderness, right? You either hold the tree and squat behind. You could do just, you know, the old other type of squat, just regular old pooper squat. You know, you can find a log, hang off of it. I mean, there's many ways. Buddy system, back to back. You got to get creative in places.
Well, let me ask you this. We've had this conversation before on the show. If you're in the middle of the marsh, are you just hopping out and going right there in the water? Are you fishing off the side of the kayak? Or are you going to find an island to pop a squat on?
So he's asking about if you're out in the marsh, what is your preferred situation to be in if you've got to take a marsh dump?
Oh, well, we're just straight off the boat.
Straight off the kayak.
All right, we got a straight off the kayaker here.
I like to find me a duck blind.
Oh, well, yeah, you can go the blind. I don't go much into the marsh as usual, so I haven't learned all the techniques, you know.
All these duck hunters are going to be like, that was you horse head.
you just outed yourself, man.
Yeah, right.
All right, Chris, well, let's get into the questions here.
Absolutely, man. So just so everybody knows, everybody out there in podcast land, we plan to approach this from the perspective of the novice, okay? Because I know we've got a lot of guys out there that want to learn about yak packing. They might not even know what yak packing is. We really want to feed the audience, but we're going to feed you as if you're eating from a fire hose here, okay? Some of the answers that are given here may be intermediate, and some may be advanced, okay? I would suggest that if anybody has follow-up questions, that you post them either to the Bro Staff Facebook page or you post them to the Yak Packing Texas Facebook page. We'll do our best to get Daniel to answer those to you afterwards.
All right, Daniel, so... in your own words, what is yak packing to you? What does yak packing consist of?
Well, instead of backpacking through the woods, you're kayak camping. Same concept as backpacking, but out of a kayak instead of on your feet.
Awesome. I'm just used to truck packing. I'm not used to yak packing or backpacking. I'm used to truck packing. That's what we'll do at our Bro Staff meetup coming up here.
So you don't know how many times I've tried to get this guy to go and do a backpacking adventure with me. And I'm like, man, I got all the gear. You don't have to worry about it. He's like, wait, you're walking, right?
We
got to
walk there.
We're doing 10 miles a day, probably every day. 10 miles a day. He's like,
I've never done the yak packing or the backpacking, so I plan to ask a lot of questions here, but I will not have a lot of input into the conversation and what is going on here. Let me ask you this first. What are some of the most important aspects of planning for a location and a route? You know, is it dealing with the landowners, combating issues with river flow? Like, what are some of the most important things that go into your planning a trip before you even, you know, pack up your stuff? What are you thinking about?
Access. First off is going to be access. Make sure I have a public access in and a public access out. That's going to be the number one priority, especially dealing with private land that runs alongside the majority of the rivers here in Texas. So access will be key. Where am I going to put in? Where am I going to take out? Am I getting a shuttle to get me there? Am I doing it on my own? What am I going to do with my truck? How am I going to get back to my truck? Those are going to be the key elements before I even start. If you look, I mean, that is probably one of the biggest questions ever asked. How do I get on? How do I get off?
Now, you talked about using the state park system for that Devil's River trip earlier. Is that how you're mainly gaining public access to these places? Or, you know, what kind of resources can you use to know where, you know, what part of the rivers are public, what part of the rivers are private, and things like that?
Well, first off is you should automatically assume everything is in a private setting. Texas only has 2-3% private land in the state of Texas, and that's a very small quantity. Any time that you're on, like, let's say the Devil's River, that's everybody's wants to knows, right? So you're going down there, you'll know they mark where the state park starts and where the state park ends. I always assume the land is private.
That's a good assumption. It really is. Safe side.
Yes.
Yep. But if you, I mean, if you're looking to do a trip, though, are you mainly looking for the state park system to set up your trip? That way, you know, it's going to be public land.
No, I'm looking for a public access and a public takeout. And a lot of times, just because, unfortunately, in this world, can't trust people with your truck parked on the side of the road anymore. I'm also looking for locals that shuttle, local river guides that might drop me off, that can watch my stuff and get me a little bit more access. I'm reaching out locally. Once I get on that river, I'm looking at basically Google Earth. I'm mapping out where there's islands, and I have to, and then I'm taking in consideration the water levels for when that photo was taken, with the graphs, the historical graphs from NOAA, basically.
Pro tip.
And looking at that historical data and seeing what the river levels were, if those islands were exposed or not at the same time. And then I'm also looking at gradient barrier, where that, you know, that's a tough conversation whenever it comes to, Texas. It's more of, you're going to end up proving yourself. You're going to have to end up proving yourself innocent if a landowner sees you on the side of their property and they decide to call the police. And they will. The police will wait for you to get out, and they'll write you a trespassing ticket. And you got to go to court and decide. So,
has that happened to you?
No.
Do you know anybody that it's happened to?
Yes.
And was it multiple? Hell? Was it hell on them, man? Were they like, man, well, I'm going to think twice about that next time.
Yeah, I think anybody that has to go through that, it's a trespassing ticket, so it's a misdemeanor, right? And you can go to court and fight it, and you'll probably be right. You'll get off. You won't pay the fine, but the hassle of doing that is probably a lot cheaper to pay the ticket, but you still have a trespassing ticket. And that's not actually something you want on your record, I wouldn't think.
Now, what was the term that you just used? Was it gradient barrier? Is that what you said?
The gradient boundary.
Gradient boundary. Can you explain gradient boundary to somebody like me? I have no clue what gradient boundary means.
Let's think of it as in the terms of where is the water, right? The gradient boundary is the water. So in low water, the river could be completely dry, okay? There's still a gradient boundary to where that river normally flows, right?
Yes.
That is the gradient boundary. That's the normal. I'm trying to say it in, you ask for novice. So that's the edge of the public land, right? That would be the public. That's the boundary between public land and private land. Okay. That's the invisible barrier.
The easement.
That is. Mm-hmm. It's the elevation. There's a specific elevation of that you have to take by satellite or by, a surveyor, land surveyor would have to, that's the only way to prove gradient boundary at this point.
Oh, wow. So, and are there a lot of landowners that are, you know, that concerned about it, that they are trying to prove where their boundary is and stuff and run anybody off that comes onto their part of the beach there?
Well, if you have 12 people coming by your property every single day, and that looks like a good spot, and 12 camps are set up every day, and people burning all your coming onto your property to get firewood and leaving the trash behind, well, the landowner is going to start getting a little agitated, and they're going to start doing it. You know, they're going to start prosecuting and keeping people off of it.
Man, in humans Texas, can suck, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the end of it, right? People spend a lot of money to be right there.
That was going to be the next thing I said, man. They bought that property so they could have riverfront property and enjoy it without, you know, a whole bunch going on. And if you said there's 12 people camped up on their property, you know, leaving trash, burning their wood.
I didn't even know that campfires were allowed. There's usually burn bans just about everywhere that you go.
Yeah, campfires are always a tricky situation, right? Typically, fires are allowed if they're contained. So bring in a nice little, you know, you can buy these really lightweight little grill boxes that you put a little fire in there. And that's just a respectful thing for the next guy. It's also a respectful thing to make sure access doesn't get revoked. You know, you go 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when you were doing this, nobody cared. I mean, they didn't care, you know, but the more and more people discover things, the more restrictive it gets. Because, I mean, we see all over Texas, the recreational rivers that are jam-packed. You can't even see the water during the summer in some of these stretches.
It becomes more difficult to leave no trace. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and some people don't care about not leaving a trace, and that's the problem. I think it's the people who could care less whether they leave a trace or not. They're just going to use it up until it's gone and they can't use it anymore, and then they're going to move on to something else. You know, those are the people, that's the problem, the people that have that kind of mentality.
Yeah, and when you're looking at just going down the river, I mean, you take the Devils. When I first went, you didn't see anybody. The landowners would come out to the edge and wave at you. Now they're watching you, making sure that you keep on going. You know,
people they're out there, get off of my lawn.
But they're not bad. They're just making sure that you're being respectful. I bet you if you stopped, waved, and talked to them, they might even give you access. A lot of times, just knowing the land, being respectful, paying the dues of how we did it when we were younger. If I wanted to go dove hunting on the neighbor's property, I knocked on his door. I asked him. I cleaned up all my shotgun shells sometimes. When I was real young, I probably was dumb and not, but my dad would make me for sure go back there and pick them up. And then you'd lend a helping hand when he asked you. You know, and you put in work and you paid for it whichever way you could, whether it was out of respect or whether it was a little hard labor, you know, bringing them some birds or fish or something, right? No. You always just showed that courtesy.
When you were younger, were you a Dan, a Danny, a Daniel?
I'm Dan, Daniel. Those are the two I am.
When you were younger, like your dad was about to whoop his ass, was he like, Daniel?
Oh,
yelling at you from
man, I was running. I didn't even hear him. Whenever I did something wrong, I already knew it. I was self-disciplined.
You heard the leather come through the belt loops.
It was usually my mom, wait till your dad gets home, and at that point I was pretty good.
You had a healthy self-preservation.
I did.
I hope these guys are a rule follower. I hope these guys are taking notes and they're not getting scared. I hope they're not getting scared about yak packing. I hope they're not turned off already. You know, it seems like there's a lot to do, guys, but what Daniel's trying to tell you here is that it's not only worth it, but there are resources out there. He keeps bringing up guides. Okay, there's guides out there. But if you want to plan it yourself, these are the steps that we're going through so that you can learn how to do it. So
yes.
You've already talked about the most important aspect of planning your location and route, dealing with landowners and combatants. Well, I guess next you were going to ask about river flow, Drew. But sure. I want to ask something real quick about now, knowing that they're both important, would you put more emphasis on your route or your gear that you're bringing with you?
Well, when you're dealing with, if we're going to go straight river, because that's typically what most folks are doing. If you're doing river, the route's pretty self-explanatory. It's one way in and one way out, right? You're not, there are people that go upstream, but we won't get into that.
I guess I should have put, I guess my emphasis was on the wrong syllable. Would you put emphasis on planning what you're doing along your route?
Yes.
Like, okay, this is where I need to camp. This is where, you know, I need to take my breaks. I got to make sure I'm prepped in this area for this type of situation because we might have some rapids here or, you know, do you put more emphasis on planning what you're going to do along your route, or do you put more emphasis on planning what type of gear that you're bringing?
I would say I put equal. First off is I want to make sure that my campsites that I have planned, let's say if I'm planning 7 days, okay, a 1 week trip, and I'm going to go 60 miles, okay, or 100 miles or 70 miles. I am going to plan on paddling 1 mile per hour always, okay? 1 mile per hour is what I'm going to plan on. Not because that's how fast I'm going, right? But that's going to be, I want to take into account fishing. I want to take into account hanging out, eating lunch, enjoying certain sceneries, taking photos. I want to enjoy my trip.
Okay? Gotcha. So if you end up with a surplus, hey, you know, hang out a little bit longer. Yeah, next day. But if you're running behind, you know you got to kick it into second gear or next gear, man.
Yep. Paddle full speed for a couple hours, right? I've ran into where I'm finding it's getting dark and I don't have a campsite. I've been there, right? Because we lollygagged around. And paddling at night is fun. It's different. It's an experience, but it's also not safe. So I'm going to know where my campsites are, how far they are using Google. I'm going to set some coordinates in a GPS or take a mental aspect of a landmark of something along the way. And that's going to be kind of my guide. Once I see that landmark, I get to that mileage. I might just camp right there. If I have plenty of daylight and we don't like that spot, we might move on a mile down the road. The problem with not knowing where you're going to kind of camp, having a plan A and a plan B, is that you can find yourself paddling at night. And in certain rivers, that would be not smart by any stretch. In other rivers, it's just a river. You're just going, you know, but for the most of it, you do not want to be paddling. You should be camping an hour before sunset, you know. That's how I look at it.
You just mentioned some rivers you want to be camping. You want to be there before it gets dark, or you don't want to be paddling on it at night. If we're talking about a novice yak packer, what rivers or, you know, what trips maybe from here to here would you suggest they start researching for someone who's a novice? Like, what are some easy trips for first-time yak packers?
Buffalo Bayou.
No, actually, that one's not very safe. The bum camps along that thing and the trash in that.
There's a lot of ish in the bayou, too.
Oh, God, that thing is nasty. I would not recommend that trip to anybody. there's some up in northern Houston that aren't too bad, but still, I mean, it's just, that was just fun.
I think the Colorado's pretty simple.
Colorado, simple, Brazos River. The Devils, I don't find it hard, right? I find it, you have a guide. They're setting the destinations. You have a permit system. You get a map. You have prepaid campsites. They're marked pretty well. It's easy to portage. Portage meaning you're going to go around a rapid or a hazard. You're going to either line your boat, which would be tying a string to it, letting the river kind of finding a calm space that the river can come down, or portaging, meaning pulling it out and carrying it around a hazard, which for a novice, enjoy the river, go around it. You know, you don't have to go down every river. You don't have to prove yourself that you can do it. If you don't feel comfortable with it, don't do it. And that's a great rule of thumb. Also, if you have a novice with them, you know, make sure a strong paddler, a strong river guy or gal is at the end of the rapid, and that there's somebody behind the rapid that can go down and catch somebody, and there's people on the side with row ropes or whatever it is. Depending on water level, sometimes you've got to have that even if you're an experienced person.
Right? You got a support system with you.
You have a support system, absolutely. And I think as a novice, you want to go with somebody experienced. Me and my buddies, we were not experienced going through places with no communication to the outside world. People, we just said, we'll be back if you don't hear us in a game warden. Here's the phone number of the local game warden. Here's the local border patrol. And if you don't see us, just come get us. We don't know what's going to happen. Right. Mm. And that was kind of our first trips. That's the way we did it. You know, I have friends that Coast Guard has rescued them out in Baffin Bay because they would go out and their boat would break down and they planned on camping out there. and they're drifting around out in Baffin, you know, in the Laguna Madre, in different spots.
Don't say that, because me and Chris are trying to plan a little trip to West Matagorda here pretty soon, and we're going to take a skiff over there. So don't. Hey, hopefully we don't get no bad juju talking about this boat breaking down in the middle of the bay.
Man, I mean, you're talking about when we're young and just whatever worked. If it floated, we'd try it, you know.
But well, me and now, Chris are older, and we still do that.
Yeah, I do too. But you, like, when you're planning that trip, having somebody experienced on your side is absolutely priceless. Knowing the river is also a great thing to have. But if you have somebody experienced for rivers, they're going along with you, they're going to know how to handle things. You know, we have a rule of thumb, try not to let the last guy not be seen, right? So you might have one, I've always been known just to paddle on and wait for somebody at the end. They think I'm fishing ahead of them, but sometimes I'm just chilling and relaxing by myself. Other times I'm fishing ahead of them, but you know, I'm a pretty strong paddler, so I might go out. I might be a quarter mile. The next guy might be a quarter mile behind me, and then a quarter mile behind them. But we're never leaving the last guy behind. We're always stopping around the bend, stopping at the bend, waiting for the next guy to catch up. Any major hazards, we have pre-planned that's where we're going to stop if we already know the river. If not, if somebody finds a hazard, we stop. Whether it's a class one or a class four, we're stopping, we're waiting, and we're gathering the group, because it just takes a very simple slip up and you're in big trouble.
You know, this reminds me of how, are you a motorcyclist at all?
Or no.
Have you ever been?
The last Drew? Time I was on a motorcycle, I was towing it behind a truck and it fell over because we couldn't start it. We're pull starting a motorcycle.
So motorcyclists, whenever you do a group ride, you always have your two strongest riders, or two of your most knowledgeable riders, whether they're the most knowledgeable about the route or just, maybe they've got the biggest balls, but they're either in the front or in the back, and they're helping to lead the pack and then keep the pack healthy.
That's correct.
What they're trying to do. So that's pretty much what you're explaining there as well.
Absolute same concept, right? You want pairs are always good. Pairs that think alike as well. You have to, when you're going 7, 8 days, 10 days, I'm going with a buddy of mine. We're going to be in the woods for 12 days. Your company is extremely important, more so sometimes than even how difficult or how easy the trip is, just the company you are paddling with. I've paddled with a lot of people I met at river put in. You know, I have a lot of my trips are that way. Hey, you want to go? Yep. Okay. Let's go.
It's kind of like hiking too. Yeah. Yeah. Hiking too. You end up meeting people on the trail.
Yep. And it's important to know your company, you know, do some thoughts with it. I mean, we've had people that go and day one, you could tell if you had a helicopter, they're gone. And I've had other people, that would stay the rest of their life out there. Right. And never take back out. I'm good right here forever. And so knowing your company and knowing your company's gear is also just as important. I think you can't stress enough. We're talking about I've gotten off subject. So put me back on topic. I'll just talk forever.
Keep going. Just keep going. We'll ask questions when we want to get to a no topic. Just keep going.
OK, so you want to make sure your people have a good gear. You want to make sure that you have a plan along the way. You have backup plans, and you want to make sure that you know when everybody's starting and you know when everybody's going to end, right? Because that mental aspect, especially when you get on a river like the Pecos, where the water is slowly dehydrating you the whole way, and your mental clarity, you're 7, 8 days in and you're dehydrated. It's hot, it's cold, it's both, you know, it's windy, and that mental aspect of when am I stopping, right? When am I starting? Can I sleep in? Are we going to sleep in tomorrow? Are we going to take it easy in the morning? There's nothing worse than everybody packed up and you're the last one and you're rushing around and you think everybody's about to leave you and you're going to be last in the pack all day. That's not fun, right? It's not fun also to be with a bunch of people and they're taking 3 hours to get to the next hazard, right? And you're sitting there going, hey, we're not going to make it to our spot. We're not going to make it to work Monday, you know? And
my wife's going to send out the cavalry for me.
Right. And so everybody kind of has to be on the same plan, and going into a extended trip is going to be like a Devils or a Pecos or a Rio Grande. You know, when you're going into those multi 5+ day trips, it's very important to know what we're doing along the way, each and every day. And then when something has to change, you do it as a group. You don't leave anybody out. You ask the questions. What do you want to do? What does this person wants to do? You don't want to get two conversations going that are opposite and create some animosity or create some conflict that does not need to exist, because tomorrow when you wake up and you're fresh again, everybody's friends, but you don't want to add a layer to something that's unnecessary.
It's already tense and
right.
You know, somewhat difficult, and yes. Tension, I'm sure, is already, you know, rising in everyone. Now, you mentioned the Pecos. Listeners, if you have not heard anything about the Pecos River in Texas, you need to take a moment, pause this, and go pull up at least one photograph on Google. Probably one of the most picturesque river trips. And I just want to see it. I just want to, even if it's from afar.
You can go to my Instagram, adventure_on_outdoors Instagram, and scroll down, and you'll start seeing lots of pictures of the Pecos, the Devils, and different rivers across Texas.
It's just beautiful, man.
Yes.
Well, let me ask a few follow-up questions here for everything that you just talked about, because a few things came to mind. Now, you mentioned the Brazos. And you mentioned the Colorado. Is there, a space in between going from this place to this place on the Colorado that you would suggest for a first timer, or this place to this place on the Brazos that you would suggest?
No, I really can't. I don't give out what trip to do typically, because I think part of the fun is to research it and understand it. If I give you in and a takeout, you're going to go put in and take out, but it might be over your level, or it might be a little more difficult to find those exact campgrounds. I've not given out a bunch of GPS points and different things, just for the fact that things change on the river constantly from one time to the next. Something could be different. The river could be up 4 inches and that gravel bar no longer exists. Or that campsite out of the gradient boundary, you're now out of the gradient boundary. So the best thing is that's why we put together kind of Yak Packing Texas Facebook group, is to ask those questions on there and say, hey, look, I really want to go on the Brazos. Where's the best time for my first trip? Is there anybody that wants to go?
Man, and then you prepare yourself for crucifixion. Because it's Facebook.
No, that's not allowed.
I'm just messing.
My group. I delete people just for, there's no politics. There's no nothing. It's only help. If you're not helping, then you're not part of it.
Let me focus Drew's question a little bit.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and bring it to let's talk about the Colorado for a second.
Okay.
What are some of your favorite? Have you done the Colorado before?
I've done sections and day trips on it, but never overnight, because if I'm spending that time, I'd rather go to my other favorite rivers.
Okay. So you haven't done a multiple day trip on the Colorado?
No.
Okay. I would recommend that if you've never done any portion of the Colorado, the first place that you check out is Bend, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably one of the most amazing sights for us flatlanders when it comes to just a quick, simple, easy river trip. You got these bluffs, right? These river bluffs. You know, on one side it's going to be flat, and then on the other side you've got this large bluff. And then you've also got things like Gorman Falls, which are really, really cool. It's limestone falls. to see. But what other parts of the Colorado have you been on that are as nice as something like Bend?
Man, the Colorado is pretty long. The further away you get from the coastal region, the prettier the stretches become. I mean, you get into the Edwards Plateau area, all those rivers. Actually, you can take pictures from the Devils to the Colorado to the Brazos to the Llano, the Guadalupe, the Frio. All of them start looking very similar when you get start getting into that Edwards Plateau, the hill country, and all of that. They have that same ecosystem. When you get to the Devils, starting to get to West Texas, the Rio Grande, you start getting in that Trans-Pecos region where multiple ecosystems are coming, merging together. So you get a lot different flora and fauna than you would, say, the hill country, where you get a lot more just the cedar and the cypress. But, I mean, to single out the Colorado or the Brazos, I mean, we get into a whole nother podcast. I don't want to get it where, you know, we say the Colorado is the best one to go, or the Frio. I think the best one to go to is the one you research, the one you find out the hazards along the way, and the ones that you can do in the time frame that you want when you're sticking with 1 mile per hour of paddling, right? And the one that you have a group of friends that you're going to get along great with, and not start with a 7-day trip or a 5-day trip. Start with a 2-to-3-day trip at the max, where you have an escape, where you can predict weather better. Because once you get past that 48 to 72 hours, weather becomes your nightmares.
That answer sounds a lot like the answers that we get for fishing locations, right, Drew? Like, what's your favorite fishing location? The one that I'm in at the time that I'm fishing.
Yeah. No, and look, I mean, we could talk about each river individually, and if we want to, I'm good with it. Colorado is not the best one.
It's an easy river, easy paddle. There's a lot of put-ins. There's a lot of campgrounds all along the Colorado.
Well, and it's close to the Houston area, too, when you're talking about the Colorado and the Brazos. It's close to the bigger metropolitan area here, and that's why we hear so much more about it.
Right, and I think that's true. Colorado access is everywhere, right? There's a lot of access on the Colorado and quite a bit of access on the Brazos. Those two are probably the most remote, tight-feeling paddles closest to the metropolitan areas until you get to Austin, and then you a little bit around all of them, you know? But, you know, you want to pick your distance. You know, I'd say a 5-mile paddle for your first trip per day is ideal. That gives you enough time that if you just board paddling, you're not overstretching yourself physically. And you can do that relatively easy and still have a lot of time to make up to find the campground if you just aren't great at map navigation or GPS and Google Earth, you know. I think that's your best step moving forward and looking at that 6 miles. When you start getting to 7 to 11 miles plus a day, you're really stretching yourself thin. And that once that worry sets in, it might not worry you, but it might be worrying one of your buddies. No matter how manly man you are, nature can humble you quick.
Right. If you want a marathon, go out there and expect a marathon. If you want to go out there and enjoy your scenery, then get back to the 1 mile an hour thing.
Mm-hmm. Stay at 1 mile an hour. I think it's, you know, I paddled 100 and something miles in 3 days, I guess it was, 3.5, 110.
30 plus miles a day?
Yeah.
Damn.
And we were paddling in the dark, you know, and we didn't have any place to camp. We actually got flooded. There was a lot to that trip, but, you know, I don't care who you are, that'll eat you alive.
So talking about some of these crazy things, have you ever considered the safari?
No. I did for a little while. I was thinking about doing it, but I have to find a bunch of people that are as dumb as I am. right? And I have
Drew, have you ever heard of the safari?
I have not.
Okay, so we'll take a break here real quick and tell you what the safari is. Go ahead, Daniel.
The safari is, I think it starts on the Guadalupe or the San Marcos.
I think it's San Marcos because it starts in New Braunfels.
Yep, it starts in New Braunfels and goes all the way to the coast, following the San Marcos down to the Guadalupe, all the way down. Is that correct? Or no, it's the Guadalupe all the way down. And it is as fast as you can paddle it. So the first person that gets across San Antonio Bay to Seadrift, Texas, wins. And you have different categories of different types of boats. Some of these canoes are, you know,
8-9 feet
long. Yeah, 8 people, and they have a crew paddling. There's different divisions. They're solo. There's one guy 1 year did it on a paddleboard. He was the first person to do it on a paddleboard. Shane, he holds a couple of world records. And so there's all sorts of ways to do it. You have a support staff that drops you food. Some people are sleeping while others are paddling. And it's basically just an ultra marathon for paddlers.
It is ridiculous.
It's cool.
I think it's 190 miles. I think it's 190 miles total.
I'd be wrong to say, but I think it's even longer than that.
It might even be longer than that. I think the craziest part is whenever you finish going through the rivers, then you have to cross an angry ass. So not only do you have to make it through all the rivers, you have to cross a bay.
Yes, I did that. My 110-mile trip was from Cuero to not Seadrift. I went across to Austwell the other direction because the winds were 35 miles an hour or something like that day. And you got to cross the open bay. And you lose salt water. You lose fresh water, you know, the last day. So whatever you have on you is the end of it. So.
How fast are these guys doing this 190-mile trip?
I think they're sub 24 hours now.
Jesus. I don't even want to drive that far in a day, much less paddle a kayak.
I've known so
far.
Many people to make that same exact comment.
Geez. You have Olympic-level paddlers that are doing it. For fun, it would be fun to do. And a lot of people do it for fun, and a lot of people do it for seriousness and it's always worth, I mean, if somebody wants to test their skills, that's the one.
Okay, so here you go. The Texas Water Safari is a boat race from San Marcos to Seadrift. The total distance is 262 miles. Racers must take all the equipment they need with them, receiving only medical supplies, food, water, and ice along the way. And I know those are, your support system, you're only allowed to have like 1 or 2 people, and they must be named. It must be those people only to provide support to you, and you must detail your check-in spots that they're going
That's right.
to.
It's definitely not yak packing.
It's not yak packing.
It's yak racing. All right, let's get back into yak packing.
Okay.
All right. So earlier you said, you know, start off with maybe a 3-day trip, plan on going, you know, maybe 15-20 miles over a 3-day trip.
Yep.
Earlier you brought up that you need to make sure that you know the people with you and what type of gear they have. So let's talk about gear for a little bit. What are some essential yak packing gear for 3-day trip? Just like we said, you're going 15-20 miles. What type of gear are you bringing and why?
If I'm going to buy all new stuff tomorrow, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And
you got a bunch of Academy gift cards. You got to go spend them.
I would hope I didn't go to Academy, but I hope they were somewhere, Visa or something. So the first step I'm going to do is I'm going to look at my boat style, right? So every boat is different, but a 10 foot for rivers is better than a 14 foot for rivers. Something that's good for a lake will never be good as for a river craft, right? But what I'm going to look for is something between that 10 and 12 foot range for a, a kayak if I'm strictly focused on rivers, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go and I'm going to make sure that I have below deck storage, right? Because I might be encountering some bigger rapids, some obstacles, hurdles, portages. So I want to make sure that all of my gear can go below the deck. If you look at my kayak rigged out, you barely see anything on top. And the reason being is I'm on top. And my center of gravity extends upward and makes it harder to stabilize any kayak going down certain rapids, right? You're hitting rocks, you're bumping, you're shaking. And if you don't have those kayak muscles, you know how that can go real fast for somebody that's not used to rocking back and forth, you know?
So what kayak are you paddling right now?
I paddle a Jackson Coosa, the original Coosa, not the HD. The HD, I get into a wider kayak and a heavier kayak, and I don't have as much fun. It has less rocker, and rocker meaning the maneuverability, so that's the banana shape of the boat, I guess would be the best way to say it. It doesn't track as well as, say, like a Wilderness, something that's 12 foot that has a deeper V on that front. I can paddle extremely shallow in that. So I, as other people are getting stuck in their long bay fishing kayaks, I am just floating by and waving, right? Especially when water levels get low. And we'll get to water levels.
You're probably not afraid of the plastic getting beat up.
Oh, man, I've only had one leak since I had that Jackson. And I've put, I don't even know how many river miles, but we're in the uppers of 300 plus on that one kayak of river camping miles. And finally, the old Jackson corner seat busted through the top and I filled up with water, right?
So that's the seat, though. We're, the bottom of the kayak is still taking tons of abuse. And it's
it looks like a couple of cats use it as a scratching post for the last 25 years. I mean, that's what it looks like. It is a thick bottom hull that's made for rivers. And it's ideal. Most of the guides and the shuttles for the devil, that's what they're renting out. And there's a reason for it, because they're designed for that style of kayaking. I'm not sponsored. I don't take anything. I'm just telling you what works. I've seen them all go through. I've seen every type of kayak, you know, go through those rivers. And I'm telling you, I'm the one that is the happiest with my kayak when I get off the river.
You've seen the videos of the Hobie PA-14s going down the Devils?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, you can take anything down the river.
Let me send my $3,600 kayak down the river.
I took a $2,000 custom paddleboard down the Devils, and it doesn't exist anymore. That was the only trip it took.
Jacksons don't get a lot of love on the show because we're mainly talking about kayak fishing, but we have always prefaced it by saying that Jacksons are made for river trips. They're made for river fishing. If that's the type of adventure you want to go and do, then the kayak, the Jacksons, like the Coosa, will take a licking and they will keep on going and keep on going.
That's right. It's the slowest thing out. When I get into the open water, I hate everybody around me that's going faster than me. But yeah, when I'm like going through the rapids, I'm having the best time. So there's a give and take with any craft, but the main thing is you don't, if I'm going down, I've taken two sit-in pelicans down the Devils, and most of the time we're bailing water, okay, because they got big cracks in them. You want something of quality going down these rivers, especially if you're relying it as your way home, right? So you can't you can skimp on a lot of gear, but your kayak is not one of them. And your sleep system is the second one that's not one of them. Okay, that's my two things. So I know this is a kayak fishing deal, and everybody loves to talk about the kayak. But, you know, the kayak that you have is probably the best one, right? The kayak you have is probably the best one to get you going. But when you start going to the more of the remote wilderness, longer distance trips that do not have escape routes out, you want to make sure that you're going with one of the top brand names in that 10 to 12 foot range. After that, you're on your own, right? The paddle drives are not the best thing to be going down there because you will tear up your drive if the water levels are lower than you expect. In other places, it's not that big. You can pull them up. You can paddle with your however you want to do. But I would not recommend a pedal drive on some of these hill country rivers. They're just too shallow for the rapid areas, right? They have sunken boulders and all of that. That's not what I'm going to do. Not saying that they don't work. I've seen plenty of them pass me, and I've seen plenty I left behind. So a canoe, same thing. I mean, if you want to bring the whole kitchen and your bedroom, then the canoe is the way to go. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to rough it. I might have a friend with an ice chest, and I won't take something cold out of it because I'm a purist in that sense, right? I want it to be very difficult on me mentally and physically. My goal,
yeah.
Right?
I feel you there, man. My goal is to get out there and drain my battery down to zero.
Absolutely. And so the gear, the kayak, I'm going to put a dog leash on it, not a rope. I'm going to put a retractable dog leash, and it's going to clip to the front or the back of that kayak. And it's 110 pound. It probably cost me $75, and I still have. I've only replaced it once in a lot of submergence of it, and it works really good. I get them. They have a yellow flat nylon inside those retractable dog leash, and that is my rope, that's my anchor, that's my tie-up, that's everything I got. And that thing keeps my feet clean so I can maneuver and I don't get tangled up if I flip, right? And so I want to make sure my deck is very clean, so if I do flip, I don't put a bunch of trash that I'm never recovering in the deal. So everything needs to be as stored as much below that hole or really secure in a big dry bag in that back hatch storage on that deck storage in the back of your kayak. You want to make sure that it's balanced well, that you're not too back heavy or too front heavy, that you're sitting the way that kayak is designed to make sure that you have complete control over that craft moving through higher class rapids, right? Then what I'm going to have is just whatever rigging I want for fishing, or if I'm just recreating, depending on what it is. I'm always going to carry a spare paddle in the hole. It's going to be the cheap Carlisle's that I get
pro
for 45
tip.
Bucks.
Yeah, pro tip.
$45 to detach, and I can shove underneath there and hide in the center of that center of there and get if I ever need it. We have broken about $1,000 worth of paddles on these trips, so it does happen, and it will happen to the best.
Don't bring your $700 Warner out there.
I would, but it might break.
I'm bringing my $99 Aquabound. I'm only going 1 mile per hour anyway.
That's right. Until that 20-mile-an-hour headwind comes in, you'll hate your paddle.
I'm getting out and walking. I'm calling that helicopter that you were talking about earlier.
That's right. So you have to – so I'm going to do that. Then, so my kayak – a good paddle, your PDF, PFD.
PFD.
I've been at work all day, man.
It's all right. It's all right.
your life jacket, right? So your PFD, and you want a real one, right? Don't look at my pictures and shame me, okay? But wear a life jacket. It's worth it. I'll tell you a story shortly of why it's worth it with me. So. What changes my mind in life. But I'm going to have all of that stuff is going to be a great, and that's all going to be in there. And then I'm going to have a little dry bag that I keep, mixing knickknacks, the things I'm going to use constantly, maybe a dry bag, a couple of, you know, 3-4 liter dry bag that I'll pin up on my chair or in the back that I can have easy access to, because everything you have will get wet, right? Inside, outside, it doesn't matter. When you're going through a big rapid and you're putting that nose right through the water, if your kayak is going to get wet, something is going to get wet. And when you get to camping, it's your sleeping bag, you know, you're going to change your mind.
You're
going to
get cold pretty quick.
What I'm saying here. So everything. That's right. So I would have everything that I have is going to be synthetic, including my including my sleeping bag. I'm going to have synthetic everything. It still holds a little bit of heat when things are wet, or wool, but wool's going to get heavy when wet. So synthetic clothing. And then I'm going to have a tent. I do run tarps, but I'm going to recommend to the novice that you have a tent, a freestanding tent, something that can, you can pop up. And because there is no, you're talking about doing bedrock. I'm going to have some ditty bags, 4, 5, 6 ditty bags.
What's a ditty bag?
A ditty bag is a little mesh bag that I can throw some rocks in and tie to my guy lines of my tent.
Okay.
And keep my tent from blowing away when the winds kick up or a front blows through.
And when he's talking tent, he's not saying go out and buy you a 4-man Coleman, okay? He's talking something that'll pack down to about anywhere from 2 to 4 pounds.
Yes. And look, I'm going, my gear total, everything, never really exceeds 50 pounds. Okay? But I have thousands of dollars worth of gear that I've accumulated over the year. Right? I have a $450 tent.
You're packing in luxury with 50 pounds worth of gear, man, because I'm packing like 20.
My cooler weighs.
But that's
my cooler weighs 50.
That's
pounds.
My fishing gear. That's my fishing tackle. That's my.
Yeah, I'm just messing with you because I'm talking my backpacking gear. Yeah, you know, but
yes.
So tell me how you feel whenever you're cruising down the river and you see this guy that's got like 355 dry bags strapped to the bow and the stern of his kayak. Do you feel like stopping him and doing a shakedown?
No, because we've all been there, and part of the learning and learning new gear is to do it wrong, and the best way to learn gear is to use what you have to get you out there and laugh about it 5 years later, you know?
Well, we've all been there, but there have been a few hikes where I've been on where they do have scheduled shakedowns for people so that they can learn how to pack down a little bit lighter. Yeah, it's always
a pretty
good idea to share that knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're a backpacker, then your gear for backpacking translate 100% to yak packing. That's the difference. Instead of putting it in a backpack, you're putting it in a kayak. So, but if you never camped, you know, you're looking for a tent that's a 1 or 2 person tent. You're looking for dry bags like Seal Line, NRS, you know, the list goes on and on who makes them. But any dry bag that's a roll top, it rolls and buckles on itself. That's going to be what you're storing your gear in. You want to make sure that you buy a dry bag that will fit in your hatch spaces and that will pack. I keep one dry bag for my food. I keep one dry bag for my camp kitchen. I keep in a camp kitchen. I'm going to have a butane or an alcohol stove that boils water. That's all it's doing. It just boils water for me to cook dry food, whatever it is. That's a whole nother podcast in reality, but I'm using dehydrated food.
Are you dehydrating your own?
No, I keep thinking about it, but I like my food and I like my sleep, so I don't sleep on those two.
I'm with you on those two things. Those are two things we see eye to eye on: food and sleep.
Yeah. So, and because that's exactly what powers you through all of this. You could have a crappy day and you get a good night's rest. You wake up excited that you're there again, wondering why your brain says, "I hate this place. I'm never coming home. I'd never come in doing this again." You can take all of this stuff, you know, and throw it in the trash. I don't care. I'm walking home because I've been there, right? Mentally, that's where I've been. And wake up the next morning and going, man, how many miles we got? Let's do this again, you know? So the mental aspect, you can't preach it enough, is give it a little bit of time. It'll get better. It always does. And if you're thinking negatively, eat, drink and sleep, not alcohol, water, right?
Well, I'm glad you said water, because I was thinking earlier, This is a little off subject, but you were talking about doing the 12-day trips. What are you doing for water on those 12-day trips? Because you're not throwing, like, 8 or 9 things of Ozarka in the back of that kayak. How are you getting water out there in the 12 days? Do you have one of those filter straws or what?
I do a gravity filter. No, don't ever bring a straw.
Yeah.
The straw is good to have in your pocket when you lost all your gear and you have to walk through the desert for 3 days. And that's what the straw is only good for. It's trash. Throw it in the garbage. Don't buy another one. That's it. Okay. So enough about the straws.
All right. No straws. Got it.
Okay. There's several filters that look like straws. Don't buy the straws. That's not what they're there for. You will not get enough water and you will be dehydrated. What you want for a river is a gravity style filter, a pump style filter, or a squeeze style filter. Something that you can filter 32 to 64 ounces of water at a time.
They also have some Nalgene
gallons
bottles.
At a time
that
if
have,
you need to.
They also have some Nalgene bottles that have the filter inside.
No.
Where
throw that away. Throw that away too.
Those are no good either?
No. Anything that is self-containing, because you have to realize, like on a Pecos River trip, you're drinking, you're using a minimum of a gallon a day, and you have to filter that water, put it in something. You're using water for everything. It's your lifeline. So why do you want to not have enough?
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
It's your lifeline.
I understand that from that aspect. Yeah. Because you're gonna need a certain amount to drink, but then you're going to need a certain amount to rehydrate your foods. You're going to need a certain amount to do this and that.
Clean
and
gear.
Thing, so.
Clean. Do things clean. Keep things clean. Right. Housekeeping is huge. Organization of your gear is huge. That's the stuff that erodes at your psyche, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 days in somewhere.
So are you taking a good first aid kit is something that you really want to build and have on there, with you too, as well.
You know, I used to build my own, but I go to REI now and get the backpacker multi-day, first aid kit. And it typically has everything I need. And then I open it up and I put in my extras and take out the stuff that I don't want. And I kind of just always do it. First aid kits go bad, the medicines, the ointments and stuff like that. But I'm always going to keep something for allergic reaction, bees. I'm always worried about bees, stings, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm going to have some sort of antihistamine, a Benadryl, something along that lines. I'm also going to have some BC powder. It has a little caffeine. Hits a little bit of extra inflammation.
Were you in the military?
No.
Okay.
My dad's a veterinarian. I don't know if that. So I'm a doctor by proxy, right? No.
Well, Jessica was in the Army, and that's all she takes is BC powder. BC powder, because that's what they gave her in the Army.
Yeah, and those guys learn BC how to do it the dirty way too, man.
Yeah. But
straight down the gullet.
Yeah.
That's how I do it. BC powder, antihistamine, something for itches, anti-itch. And then I'm going to bring some good bandages, gauzes, wraps, tape, and moleskin, right? When you're paddling 100 miles and your hands are going to blister no matter how you look at it, unless you got... I don't care who you are. You're just going to get lazy paddling and you're going to have blisters on your hand. So I'll take some of that sports tape, wrap my paddle where I'm doing it to make sure that I have to keep the friction down. And I'll also have like some moleskins and stuff on in my kit, as well. And then just miscellaneous bandages, tweezers, toothpicks. If you eat enough beef jerky, those little flossing things are the best thing. You know, when you get that one little piece stuck all day, there's nothing better than a little bit of dental floss in that kit as well. I'm not big on sutures or those anti-clot things. Not saying that they don't have their place, or tourniquets. I don't have their place, but you need to be trained and educated on that so you don't hurt somebody.
Yes, sir.
So, So that first aid, standard REI backpacker kit, you know, multi-day, 5-day, week trip. kit. You know, they come, they're double the size of your fist, and that's really all you need. And then a couple of odds and ends for your terrain, or for your area. Poison, you know, if you got a lot of poison ivy, you want something to help there. Especially if you're having a bushwhack to a camping spot. But yeah, first aid, my first aid kit gets smaller and smaller and more strategic to trauma and sickness. So that's where I'm more focused on now than I was originally. So there's always an evolution with the way your trips evolve and the length of your trips in the terrain or the environment that you're paddling in, things change.
Awesome, man. Well, we could probably talk forever, it seems like, about all this stuff. But you promised that you were going to tell us about needing the PFD, and you were going to tell us a little story about that. So why don't you tell us that story, and then tell the folks where they can find you on social media and things like that.
You can find me on regular old Facebook, Daniel Lunderbrink, Instagram, Adventure On Outdoors. I have also a personal Instagram, Daniel_Underbrink, and Yak Packing Texas and Adventure On Outdoors Facebook group. So lots of different resources. There's resources across the board there, and I have a website, AdventureOnOutdoors.com, that gives you how to plan trips in graver detail than what we can probably do chit-chatting, because it would take hours and hours to really nail this to the T. But just make sure that your gear's right, that your sleep system is comfortable, your tent is there, and you're prepared for weather. So that's a whole nother deal as well. But you always have to worry about flash flooding in Texas Hill Country rivers. So your forecast is only good for about 48 to 72 hours. And then after that, it can change rapidly. And you need to be aware and have some sort of system to always have an escape plan from a river and know what you're doing before you go to bed, and always monitor river levels along the way by using rocks or sticks at the edge of the river to monitor if things are coming up or down. Things can change in matter of hours. So we went to sleep one night. We woke. We parked our paddleboards. We climbed up. We out of a mud bank. It was raining hard. We were watching the river rise, and we woke up and the river rose 20 feet.
20 feet.
Holy moly.
On the Guadalupe, that was the year it flooded, and I was on the river.
Oh,
remember,
wow,
remember the
man.
Flood, you know, yeah. Years back? I was on the river in part of those days.
Was that one of the days? Was that one of the Memorial Day floods that,
yeah,
that
I was
happened
on
the last few years?
I was on the major flood that happened prior to the Memorial Day flood.
Oh, man. I always have a weird fear whenever I'm doing beach camping or something, that I'm going to go to sleep and then wake up and the tide is going to come in and my truck and my tent is going to be taking on water. So I don't,
well,
I don't know.
Well, step out of your hammock. Yeah, that's what happened to me. I stepped out of my hammock, walked to take a leap, and I was standing in water.
Oh, wow.
And I was way above mud bank. I was hearing the mud banks collapse, trees fall in. I mean, we're talking big cypress trees. We were paddling right next to them.
That'll test you.
PFD. Okay, I was doing a solo trip, which I do not recommend to anybody novice, on a paddleboard on the Devil's River by myself for 5 days. And I was going down. They have these cane chutes on there that are a little narrow, and the river was quite a bit up. It was moving pretty quick that week. And I went through a chute, and my paddleboard got stuck, and the paddleboard pinned me against this little man-made bridge thing that I did not know existed. I've been through these chutes plenty of times, but a new channel opened up and I went through it, and there's an old ATV bridge or something, and my paddleboard and my leg and everything got stuck, and I'm by myself.
Oh,
and,
man.
The board was pushing up against my leg against that deal, and I was literally stuck. It took me a few minutes to self-rescue, and, you know, and I had to swim to my paddleboard once I got it loose. And if you had And I was probably minutes from breaking my leg if I had stayed there much longer. And so from that point on, I wore my PD, my PFD. So
when you
lay on your paddleboard and just lay there and go, oh, that was almost the end. Or when you are in a flood, or you're not sure if you're going to be swept away in the middle of the night, those life jackets are exactly why they call them life jackets. They're there for you. Hitting your head, busting your knee, all those things. When you're by yourself and you don't realize it, it's the most experienced people have some of the worst problems. And when you're on a river and you're walking and you hit your head and you're, let's say you're a quarter mile away from everybody and you go place down in the water, it might be 3 inches. And they say you can drown in 3 inches. I can see it.
Yeah, you know? Say it with me, everybody. PFD, prevent fucking drowning.
Exactly.
That's what it really stands for. In any case.
But my solo trip really taught me more than anything how important that is when every step could be your last step. Every paddle could be, you walk differently, you act differently, you think differently, you learn to slow down. There's something to a group of people and it makes you a lot more confident. But when things go wrong, they go really, really wrong in a river. And just being prepared, along the whole time, it's priceless, right? So, and finding it's just one of those things. I've been there and we've been in situations. In weird situations, and I just don't see that it being something today that if I could go back and change those pictures with a life jacket on, I would. But
so,
I think it's more of a lesson.
Just so we don't scare people off from trying to do a trip and being prepared, you just mentioned two instances where you had trouble. How many river trips have you been on compared to those two? I mean, we're talking probably hundreds and thousands, aren't we?
No, we're not talking thousands, but you have to realize that some of my, whenever I didn't have two little kids, I was paddling all the time. I couldn't even count miles anymore. And days I was spending in a tent. There was one year I think I've spent 50, 60 days in a tent. And you add that over the years, it starts accumulating, and the problems are very, very little.
As long as you're prepared correctly, right?
Unless you're me. If you're me, you're always going to be in a flood. It's always going to rain, and there's always going to be a problem. But we always solve it, and we always have a good time because we are prepared, right? So the things that somebody unprepared would be, being prepared makes the being in a downpour for 5 hours bearable, right? With the right gear, with the right tent, with the right stuff. It's not, most of this stuff that's on the market today is designed for your beautiful weekend warrior. But when things go wrong, you'll know where your gear lacks and you'll be changing it soon.
Yeah, man. So one more time, you mentioned a Facebook page earlier where people could go on there and, you know, ask questions and maybe hook up with some more experienced people. What was that Facebook page again?
Yak Packing Texas on Facebook. That group of people there,
there's a lot of knowledge.
There's a lot more people that should be talking to you than me, that's for sure. There's a lot of good people in there, and they're always willing to help. Help is hard to find, just like help trying to go learn fishing is hard to find. Because people are secretive about their things, don't want to. And that was one of the reasons I started doing all of this. When nobody would help me, whenever I wanted to go on certain rivers, nobody would help me. Nobody. Even the old Texas fishing forum, you know, they wouldn't help me. The TKF wouldn't help me. You had to put, there's still questions up. You could probably find them asking for help and they're blank, right? And I was like, all right, fine. I'll help everybody. So that's where I went. I went full help mode. And Yak Packing Texas came my way. We had a couple of hundred things, and the guy that actually named it and started it, gave it to me, and then we built it to about 2,700 people. And most of those people are there to help you. There's a big core group on there that is willing to help you logistically, get you the right people, put you in touch with guides. We have people that are their home rivers, that they're on it every weekend. And we every time I see somebody asking, if I know the best person, I'll point you in the right place and get you the right thing. If you have questions about gear, you can reach out to me via Facebook. Facebook's the best way, Messenger. Or Instagram, and reach out to me, and I will pour every bit of knowledge dedicated to your question. I also have on my webpage, I have a full gear list of everything I take from my hunting trips to my paddling trips. I've upgraded some of the stuff, but that right there will get you anything you want outdoors, and you can live out there with all of that stuff. So that's the best that I found, you know, at the peak of my paddling days. To the peak of my outdoor days. So I have a lot of info on the main rivers and gear on my webpage as well.
What's the web?
AdventureOnOutdoors.com. And I also have a couple of podcasts that I recorded from some of my trips, during some of my trips, post some of my trips, that I go over a few more river specifics or more camping specifics.
Well, hopefully some of our bro staff members will head over there. Maybe you'll get some more people on your Facebook group from the bro staff. You're welcome to come out to the bro staff meetup in October. It may not be your type of yak packing, but it's going to be a good time down there in Matagorda on October 24th. Chris, you got anything else you want to ask our guests today?
I might actually be passing through right there because I'm heading down to Kingsville. Sometime during that time, stop on by
and have a beer with us.
Definitely. We'll definitely be hitting you up again, man.
We're going to hit you up for a spot on one of your trips, man. That's what we need to do. Keep a spot open for Drew and I.
Let's do it. Well, we appreciate you coming on. For Drew and Chris and the rest of the bro staff, we'll see you guys later.
See
you. All right, later.
Till the morning comes, I'm gonna take my time. Well, I'll hitch my ride tomorrow on that southbound train and take it on to the coastline. Coastline. It's been a long while since I've seen the water, but I can still hear those waves crashing down. Well, it's been a long while since I've seen my grandfather, but I know that he'll always be around. He'll be around. So I'm gonna wait till the morning comes. Yeah, I'm gonna take my time. Well, I'll hitch my ride tomorrow on the southbound train and take it on to the coastline. The coastline. Somehow, but I heard what doesn't kill you well, only makes you stronger. So I guess I'm getting pretty tough by now. By now, so I'm gonna wait until the morning comes. Yeah, I'm gonna take.
I'll hitch my ride tomorrow on that southbound train, taking it on to the coastline. Yeah, I'll hitch my ride tomorrow on that southbound train, taking it on to the coastline. Coastline.